Tomorrow is Election Day in Wisconsin. While a lot of attention in Wisconsin is being paid to the race for governor, there are many other state races to watch. In an attempt to inform voters in our listening area, we've been hosting a series of state legislative candidate forums. Today, we're focusing on the 93rd State Assembly District during the Westside 93rd State Assembly District Candidate Forum right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. The 93rd District includes all of Pepin County and parts of Buffalo, Dunn, Eau Claire, Pierce, and St. Croix counties. Some of the cities and towns include Prescott, Ellsworth, Bay City, Plum City, O'Galley, and Durand. Many others that I didn't mention. I'm Rich Kramer, and joining me this hour are both men running against each other for a third time to represent the 93rd District. Joining us by phone from the campaign trail, I'd like to welcome Republican State Representative Warren Petrick of the town of Pleasant Valley. Warren was elected to the state legislature in 2010 and reelected in 2012. Warren Petrick, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, good morning, Rich, and thank you for the privilege of being here.
Our pleasure. Next, I'd like to welcome Democratic challenger Jeff Smith of the town of Brunswick, who joins us in the studio. Jeff held the 93rd district seat from 2007 until 2011, and now is seeking it once again. Jeff Smith, thank you for joining us.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks, Rich.
Good to have you. Listeners, I'd like to invite you to become part of this conversation, too, by calling in with your questions and comments for the candidates. It is your only chance to ask them direct questions, unless, I guess, you happen upon them on the campaign trail or at the grocery store, wherever. The number is 800-228-5615. Phone lines are open. If you can't get through, you can leave a question or a comment on our Westside Facebook page, and I'll do my best to get it on the air. Again, the number is 800-228-5615. So the first question is the most basic question and one that I'm almost obligated to ask. I'll start with Warren Petrick, and I'll go to Jeff Smith. Why are you running to represent the 93rd Assembly District, and what do you bring to the table?
Well, thank you for asking, Rich. Never have I been more optimistic about the direction that our state is now taking. And thanks to our last 4 years of reforms and the hard work, I really feel that we are on the right track, as do most business owners in the state, most of the people that I talk to in my district. My business experience for the past 42 years has taught me many lessons. My work helping people with disabilities for 15 years with United Cerebral Palsy has taught me many lessons. And my public service has spoken for itself. I had 4 years on the Jobs and Economy Committee, Chair of the Veterans Committee, Workforce Development Committee, Natural Resources. I sit on the Governor's Council on Workforce Investment. I sit on the Assembly Speaker's Task Force on Rural Schools and a Study Committee on Problem-Solving Courts, Alternatives, and Diversions. And all these give me a really unique perspective on how to grow jobs in the state, which is our number one priority. My relationships with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, my communities across my district, whether it's sportsmen's groups or chambers of commerce, local government officials, farmers, business owners, school officials, and the taxpayers in my district are solid. And I just tallied out yesterday over 16,000 miles in the last, since April 15th, meeting with many, many people across my district. I understand that private sector job creation is the key element for better education, better care of our veterans, our elderly, our poor, better local services for roads and police. And I will work hard to continue letting you keep more of your money in your pocketbook.
All right. Thank you so much, Warren Petrick. Now, Jeff Smith, you've held the seat before. Now you've ran against Warren a couple of times now. This is the third time. Why would you like to represent the district again?
Well, Rich, I can say this, that at this point in the history of Wisconsin and in my lifetime, I have never feared more for our future. We are headed in the wrong direction. We are we have a leadership in Madison, including the current representative, who seems to vote with them all the time, with concerns with regards to environment. Giving it up, it's destroying our environment for the interests of profit, destroying our public education for the interests of profit, and we've got to turn that all around. I have a great history in my of my own with over 40 years of true private business, where I've been an employer of over 20 people at a time, balance the books, payroll, hiring, and dealing with my customers. And most people know in this area of Eau Claire, my longtime business of Bob Smith Window Cleaning has been a family business here for now 60 years this year. I sold that business in 2011 to really focus on what I feel is really important right now in the future of the state of Wisconsin. But I've been a community leader in many levels. I served as, of course, a PTA president, which led to a regional leader of PTA, and even at the state board level, and as also appointed to a task force to study our school funding issues in the state of Wisconsin 10 years ago or so. Well, we still have that problem, and it's gotten worse because we have again the leadership here in Wisconsin and in the state legislature who are doing all they can to destroy public education and make it fail. And it's probably the most important thing right now as far as whether or not the state of Wisconsin is going to grow our economy or if we're going to go backwards, and that is protecting our public education.
Public education and the funding for it, we'll get to that in just a bit. First, I want to talk about the transportation budget for the state. A special committee has said that Wisconsin's transportation budget has a $650 million deficit and has offered a set of possible solutions, all of which basically require raising revenue. That's fancy talk for taxes and or fees. But instead of using these ideas, lawmakers voted to borrow more than $1 billion in the last budget, or the current budget, to cover the losses. Is this how we should fund our roads? I will start with Warren Petrick.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk about transportation. In our state, it is the key to and one of the highest priorities that we have of a strong economy and building a healthy environment for job creation. We know that. And it will be one of the top three topics, perhaps, as we go forward into this next term. But any enhancement of that revenue has to balance the ability of us to pay for it. My Western Wisconsin families certainly are concerned about having good roads, but we have to look at the spending that happens. We can never go backwards again and raid the segregated transportation fund, and the people tomorrow will get a chance to vote on that. My opponent had every chance to bring forth an amendment to the Constitution which would have protected the raids on segregated funds like transportation and failed to do so over 4 years. We actually passed it and went through two different legislative sessions, and then that will be voted on tomorrow. So segregated funds can never be easy pickings for any other administration. So in meeting with the Transportation Investment Coalition, I said we will look diligently and research every option that they presented in the transportation study completed several years ago. All of those were increased taxes or fees. I'm not averse to looking at those and looking at perhaps a mixture of raising certain fees nominally that won't hurt the consumer. But again, if we're going to raise sales tax, for example, on gas tax, for example, or go back to indexing, I want that to be balanced out by responsible spending by the department. And we have a great secretary right now. Secretary Gottlieb is very responsible, and he's in conversation with me very obviously on a frequent basis. So we're looking at that very carefully. It will be a multiple prong, and I want it to be a full bipartisan effort on everybody's part in good faith to sit down and come up with long-term sustainable solutions, as I do with every issue at the state level.
And before I go to Jeff Smith, I'd like to follow up with the constitutional amendment. Again, the voters will decide on that tomorrow. Could you see a situation where that would tie the hands of the state if we were in some kind of a pinch and needed to shift funds around, which is common among any governor?
I actually would advocate for protecting all segregated funds, not only transportation. But if they are earmarked for a certain program, I think that that's how they should be spent. So I don't believe it will tie anyone's hands. I think it will just result in more responsibility on the part of our administrators and our elected officials to look carefully before we extend any sort of taxes on our taxpayers. Right now, the burden is high. We're still in the top 10% in the nation on tax burden, and I want to see that lowered.
All right, thank you. Jeff Smith, the special committee, says $650 million hole. Five solutions that were offered. None were acted upon, borrowing. What would you like to see the state do in terms of fully funding what the bills are for the roads?
Well, you could begin with the fact that what we have in power right now, including my opponent, is people who sign pledges to never raise taxes. They sign these pledges with out-of-state interests from Washington, D.C., and with no regard to what they're actually elected to do, and that is to serve the constituents and voters and citizens in the state of Wisconsin. And once you do that, it forces them into positions of following through on their pledge that they signed, and so they can get reelected, and so they end up borrowing all this. Like you said, they borrowed over $1 billion for transportation to cover what their projects that they had in mind. And so who's paying for that? Our children and our grandchildren down the road. And that is the wrong approach to take. And then to assign this task force and then not even pay any attention or listen to their recommendations, I mean, what sort of politics is being played there? You don't like their recommendations, so because that might mean actually doing the right thing. And as far as the constitutional amendment, Rich, I got to agree that with you, and that is that, not that you had a position, but
I was asking.
Asking the question, but I do believe it's going to tie the hands of elected officials, and that's a real serious problem. We elect people to make decisions. We elect people to have to weigh all of the options that are available to them. If we have a sudden natural disaster in Wisconsin, like a tornado day, where you know we have multiple tornadoes, and we have to act right now to help people out. But you can't touch this whole pot of money that has now been segregated and designed in a constitution for a special interest. That's really a bad precedent to set. Now, I was thinking about this coming in here, that this would probably be one of the things that would come up on this because no one's really talking about this ballot piece tomorrow that's on there for the referendum, or for the constitutional amendment. And they did miss something, and I'm glad Warren just brought it up, and that is that, gee, if you're going to do that, why wouldn't we have put in the Constitution that we don't touch money for our public education, and we don't put it in the pockets of for-profit interests. We make sure it goes to the public schools that it was meant to go for, and that it is always there and constant and fairly divvied out for every school district. You know, so there we are. We're going to instead pass a constitutional amendment for the interests of one particular group, and that's road builders, and we're still not protecting our public education.
I'd like to follow up though, Jeff. There was a lot of talk about the Governor Doyle raid on the transportation fund. Do you think it was right for him to take that money and move it into a general fund to close budget holes?
I'll tell you what a budget is. A budget is a moral document, and it really determines, voters should be able to look at a budget and determine where are your leaders standing and what's their priorities. And when we're faced with what Governor Doyle inherited, by the way, from the Thompson-McCallum years, a $6 billion deficit, and he had a lot of things he had to do to protect our priorities. And our priorities are our children and our children's future, which is education. And if that's wrong, I would be very disappointed with the state of Wisconsin if that's what they believe is the wrong way to go. Because the fact is, that should be our priority. And that's what Governor Doyle did. He moved money to protect public education. And that's still our highest, our most important priority.
This is the Westside 93rd State Assembly District Candidate Forum. On the phone with us is Republican incumbent Warren Petrick of Pleasant Valley, and in the studio is Democratic challenger Jeff Smith of the town of Brunswick. The number to call in is 800-228-5615. We'll take our first call of the morning, and we're going to go to Willem in Colfax. Willem, we've got a lot of people on the line, so if you could be as succinct as you could be, but you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's your question? Whoops.
Hello?
Willem, there you are. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. No, in 2011, there were 30 frac sand mines in the state, and now there's 140 proposed mines and proposed facilities in the state. And I feel like with the current administration, and I don't think this is a political role. I mean, I think we would all agree that the role of the government is to protect the health and welfare of its citizens. And so our state has done, under the leadership of Governor Scott Walker and the Assembly and the Senate, has done nothing. They've, in fact, gone the other way. They've last year in November, they tried to pass a bill that would restrict local control over this industry, and the DNR asked for 10 people to monitor this industry. The governor gave them 2, and now what I think is a political ploy has appointed 2 more, which is 4-6 short of what they originally asked for. And the DNR allows 10 tons of fugitive dust per year from these sites, which they're at, without any study of the effects of that. They've passed bills to allow, to deny the DNR the ability to take into effect the cumulative effect of high-capacity wells, and some of these wells are using 400,000 to 2 million gallons a day. And, and the governor recently on August 27th passed, signed something that would make it harder for citizens to petition their government in regards to environmental things. So, you know, taking all that into account and the fact that I believe that really, to say it in a sort of a colloquial way, is I think that this administration is pimping for this industry, and how are we, the citizens, supposed to, there's 58,000 people that live within a mile of one of these facilities, and how are we, the citizens, I think it's ironic that Mr. Petrick comes from a place called Pleasant Valley, how are we supposed to, you know, protect the health and welfare of our citizens when our government doesn't even, isn't on our side in this issue, and how am I supposed to, if Mr. Petrick would explain to me what he would do to make sure that the health and welfare of the citizens, children, the 58,000 residents that live close to these places, how we're going to protect them when we don't have the tools and we're not allowing the tools to be used. Then the DNR, they lost funding for their public notice. They don't have funding to publish public hearings.
All right, Willem, we got you loud and clear. Sounds like a question that's directed to Warren Petrick, so I'll let you respond. Warren Petrick.
Well, thank you very much, Willem, and thank you for calling in. Sand mining has been an incredibly fast-growing industry, and during the conversations at the Capitol, there were many concerns on all sides of the issue, and I listened very, very carefully to what was going on. I really, truly believe that it should become and remain a local issue, a local control issue, so that you can go to your local officials and say, how can I help? How can I get my opinion in on this as we go forward? Protecting health and welfare, absolutely. What had happened in the budget and wasn't reported was they asked for 10 positions at the DNR, and at the end of the day, they said we actually only need 2 to monitor to the levels that we need to do so. We gave them 2. Then they asked for 2 more. We gave them that. And now, in this new budget that I'll be dealing with in January, we'll be looking very carefully at whatever number we need at the DNR that is reasonable, that will keep monitoring the air and water quality standards, of course. And you hit on so many different topics. I was trying to take some notes, but but actually, I was not a co-sponsor of any bill that it came forward. It never even got a hearing. So that bill, thanks to the efforts of Western Wisconsin legislators and many others that would have compromised some local control, never even saw the light of day. So I will continue to be an advocate and a strong champion for local control, and I will do whatever it takes to protect the health and welfare of all my citizens, of course. And a study actually is being conducted right now on high-capacity wells and their effect, and we're anxiously awaiting all of the results of that. It'll be a multi-pronged and multi-discipline scientific study of cumulative effect of high-cap wells. So we are keeping a very close eye on this, and we will be working closely with the DNR as they protect your health and welfare. Thank you for asking.
I'd like to follow up on the local control issue. Those were two bills in past sessions that would have limited the local control. There is concern among people like Willem and others that the next attempt will be inserted into the budget as far as restricting local control. So if that kind of language was inserted into the budget, would you vote against the governor's budget?
I would look at that and try to amend it before it ever got saw the light of day, certainly. But that would be part of a long and arduous budget process.
Sure.
And as I have told my constituents over and over, I will be a champion for local control. So I did not co-sponsor either of those bills. They got no traction whatsoever in western Wisconsin or in the Central Plains, where this is a big concern. So, again, we will be providing state resources and information to local governments. I like to act as a resource and get the right people for the right questions to answer those questions for the people that are living next to and are concerned about the impact of these sand mines.
I need a chance here for a second.
Go ahead, Jeff Smith.
A couple of things. You know, when I was in the legislature, the 2009 budget, and we were in control and the power at that time, majority, and something came up at the last minute that they were going to do something very similar in as far as they had inserted in the budget the not allowing towns to be able to work hand in hand with counties with contracts. And that was at that moment, the day we were supposed to actually vote on that budget, that I went into our caucus and said, that's where I draw the line when it comes to local control and protecting our towns. And I refused at that moment. I was not going to vote for that budget if that stayed in there. And I was able to help get others to follow along with me to make that demand, and they had to pull that from the budget. That's how it works, and that's what sort of backbone you need to have as a legislator to protect your towns and local government. And the other thing I wanted to point out is, as long as it was also brought up, is the high-capacity wells. There's the issue that the bill that had passed in this legislature, and I think it was in the budget, that actually made it illegal for the DNR to consider how high-capacity wells affected the wells around them is the most obvious piece of corruption and obvious telling point of what is wrong with the direction we're going now and the way this legislature is operating. Really, you're going to make it illegal to consider the welfare of the persons around that high-capacity well? I cannot believe we actually have legislators and a governor who operate that way, and I think that's really an important piece that needs to be talked about again.
You're talking about the cumulative impact.
That's right.
Okay. Warren Petrick, would you like to respond to that?
Well, I could really appreciate the righteous indignation of my opponent who voted for the budget that led to the huge deficits that we dealt with, increased spending by 10%, raised taxes and fees by $5 billion. So I really appreciate his passion on this. And I think that my constituents know that I will be watching out for their best interests. I have from the beginning of this four-year stint that I've been in the legislature, and I will continue to watch very, very carefully for those types of things that either appear in the budget or in a separate piece of legislation. Of course, that was not in the budget. The ICAP well bill was a separate piece of legislation. I believe it was SB 302, which again did not move forward. And thanks to the efforts of myself and other colleagues, so we are watching out for our constituents. Thank you.
With regard to the frac sand mining, I've got one more follow-up question. Environmental, and I'll start with Jeff Smith and go to Warren Petrick. Some environmental groups and residents from western Wisconsin, they actually collected a petition. They asked the DNR board to order the DNR, the state agency, to conduct what's called a comprehensive analysis of frac sand mining, industrial sand mining, on the impacts on the environment and quality of life. That would include cumulative impact. I mean, it's what they're asking for is a grand scale kind of a study. So, Jeff Smith, do you think such a study is needed?
Absolutely. Absolutely is needed. Just bullying ahead forward with sand mining without any without this sort of study so that we understand how it's affecting its neighbors and how it's affecting Western Wisconsin, and especially when it comes to water and air quality. We've already had cases even recently in Trempealeau County where this company did not line their ponds, two of their three ponds. They lined one of their ponds, so they knew they were supposed to, but they didn't line two of the ponds. And now I've just also heard that the financial institutions in Trempealeau County refused they're refusing, I think, loans or that because they are not sure what the water quality is going to be in the county in that area now around Whitehall. So these are really important issues. And right now we have the DNR in the hands of somebody who is anti-DNR, anti-natural resources. This is also the sort of thing that's going on in Madison right now. And their hands are tied by a legislature who's refusing to let them do their job. And we absolutely, you can go to jeffsmithforassembly.com, by the way, and I have a whole section on sand mining and recommendations of things that should be done. And one of them, of course, is to make sure the DNR is able to do their job.
And Warren Petrick, you mentioned the study of the high cap wells. That's one of those comprehensive analyses that is happening in the Central Sands area where they've noticed some lowering water tables. But do you think a similar comprehensive analysis should be done for industrial sand mining?
Absolutely. And this is one of the fine things that our DNR is working on. And to say that the DNR is controlled, they are a separate agency from the administration and from the legislature. And what we have is a new attitude at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources of working together with citizens, with farmers, with businesses, to make sure that we do things in a responsible fashion. When people are not in compliance, such as the examples that my opponent just mentioned in Trempealeau County, companies should and will be fined. So that is just fine. Use good science, use good solid science, and those are the types of things that can come out of this analysis. I don't believe their results are published yet, and this is a quickly growing industry, of course, and it's brought in billions of dollars to the economy. They want to be good neighbors, and also the folks living around them can weigh in, and we will continue to have an open dialogue on this. We will provide, as I said, the DNR with the resources necessary to protect the health and welfare of all my constituents.
This is the Westside 93rd State Assembly District Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio Stations 88.3 WHWC in Menominee, Eau Claire, and 88.7 WRFW over in River Falls. We've got three callers on the line, Mike, John, and Donna. Hang tight. We'll be right back with more discussion after a short break. This is the Westside. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the Westside 93rd State Assembly District Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this morning. I'm joined by the candidates running to represent the 93rd. They are Republican incumbent Warren Petrick of Pleasant Valley and Democratic challenger Jeff Smith of Brunswick. Let's go straight to the phones. We've got some folks that have been holding for quite a while. We appreciate that. The next question has to do with veterans, and we're going to Bay City. Mike, you're on the air. Thanks so much. What's on your mind?
Well, sir, I want to appreciate both of these gentlemen to answer questions. Mike Farrell here. I want to ask, I am a citizen soldier who has garnered the nomenclature veteran. I am retired.
Okay.
I want to hear, after the debacle at the Veterans Administration in Washington, D.C., and the purging, what is happening in the state of Wisconsin regards veterans? Thank you for my question.
Thanks so much, Mike. Appreciate it. Let's go to Warren Petrick first.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Farrell, for serving our nation. It is truly the honor of my life to serve as the Assembly Veterans Chair. We've had a tremendous term this past year, and we've been in conversation with our federal colleagues and are doing our best. What I love to hear is that our TOMA facility is providing great service for the most part, very, very high marks from the veterans that are being served there. So we will continue to monitor that situation, But we did have an incredibly powerful session this past for military affairs in general. I worked very closely with Department of the Veterans Affairs Secretary John Skokos. I worked closely with General Donald Dunbar of the Wisconsin National Guard. And I certainly am proud of the work that we've done in a bipartisan fashion. We passed 12 different types of very positive veterans legislation this past time, including nonprofit grants for folks that are helping veterans dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder, including one facility very near Eau Claire that hopefully will be a beneficiary of that so they can help those heroes like yourself that have come back injured from war. We have worked on prioritizing course registration for veterans. That did pass into law, Act 56. I did a placeholder for the Vets Home at King. That will be remodeled and able to handle many more veterans in a really top-notch, state-of-the-art facility. And that placeholder legislation passed at the end of last session, and we will find the funding for that. We added 100 full-time staff to direct care in vets facilities around the country or around our state. I passed a conservation patron license for hunting for Purple Heart recipients at a great savings to them. That was Wisconsin Act 55. The military service people can purchase the Wisconsin retirement system benefits. So on and on it goes. And as I say, I've been very, very proud of my colleagues working so closely with me to support our real heroes in Wisconsin. So thank you very much, Mr. Farrell. I appreciate your question.
And thank you, Warren Petrick. Jeff Smith, response to the caller.
And I appreciate you too, Mr. Farrell. That was I appreciate your service. When I was in the legislature, I worked closely with my friend Steve Hilgenberg, who has since passed away, one of the finest legislators I knew at the time, for sure. And he was a veteran, and he was in charge of – he was the chairman of the Veterans Committee at the time, because that's who should be somebody who has that experience, should be the person in charge of Veterans Committees. They really understand things. And we passed unanimously at the end of our session a bill at that time to expand the ability of the tuition benefits and other benefits that veterans can enjoy through Wisconsin. Unfortunately, the Senate didn't take that up at that right after we did. So that was unfortunate at the time. But what's really unfortunate this past session is the fact that my opponent and the rest of the Republicans in the legislature chose, very consciously chose, to pass legislation to make it more difficult for veterans and others who have asbestosis to get the care and the benefits that they deserve, just because they are they had to weigh whether what was more important to them, our veterans' health and others, or the profits from the industries who actually had poisoned them in the first place. So they chose, of course, as we see so many times, they chose the profits over the health and welfare of our veterans. And every veterans group was opposed to that piece of legislation, and they made this decision anyway to stand there on the floor and vote with them. And even if Mr. Petrick had voted against that bill, it would have passed anyway. It wouldn't have been any risk for him to actually vote no on that bill, but he did anyway.
Warren Petrick, would you like to respond?
Absolutely. Do you really believe that I, as the Veterans Chair, would ever pass any legislation that would harm my veterans in any way? This was purely political ploy. AB 19, which he's referring to, is a trust transparency bill. And if you look into the details of it, this is protecting our veterans' trust funds from fraud. Nowhere in the United States have veterans lobbied to oppose such a move. We had two groups that registered against it. All the other veterans groups were in favor of it. It will serve to protect veterans who rely on these bankruptcy trusts and not litigation to get compensation for asbestos exposure issues. And so I certainly supported this. This will protect that trust fund long into the future. We know that there are going to be many more soldiers that are going to be affected by asbestos issues, so we are going to protect that. And that's exactly what it does. It provides transparency. It establishes the procedures and requirements to safeguard personal injury bankruptcy trusts from fraud and abuse. And it was used as a political tool, and that's very, very unfortunate. I really wish that people would look into the truth of these things before they bring up political issues. I tend to really discount that as a purely political ploy. Very, very unfortunate on the part of the other side of the aisle.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got John in Menominee calling, and he is on the air right now. John, thanks so much for calling in and hanging with us. What's on your mind?
Hi, I've got a comment and then a question on the environment. Yesterday in the Leader Telegram, Mr. Petrick claimed that he was a conservationist who had the highest priority of the protection of Wisconsin's precious natural resources, unquote. Unfortunately, the Wisconsin League of Conservation Voters found that he only voted for the environment 33% of the time. The other two-thirds he voted for the developers and polluters and the absentee mine owners. Mr. Smith, on the other hand, actually did vote for the protection of the natural resources 100% of the time when he was in office, and the League designated him a champion of the environment. My question for both candidates is, what do they think about the $700,000 secret payment or bribe that was given to Scott Walker and the Republicans by Gojibek Taconite Mining for the passage of Act 1? Which gave them permission to dig the largest open-pit iron mine in the world, not just Wisconsin, but the world, possibly up to 21 miles long and 1,000 feet deep, right in the middle of our North Woods.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, John, for the question. And since Warren Petrick just finished up, let's go to Jeff Smith. What do you think about the $700,000? This all came out during the John Doe investigation. A lot of people say that that investigation is politically driven, but either way, we found out that this large chunk of money was put to the was donated by the company at the time that the bill was being crafted.
Well, speaking of politically driven, certainly that piece of legislation was politically driven, and obviously from the fact that $700,000 went into campaign coffers for Governor Walker, I don't know what else you can say about that. It's obvious. It's pay to play in this state now, and far worse than it's ever been in the history of Wisconsin. We got the robber barons back, over 100 years later. We need a fighting Bob La Follette right now to put everybody back into place, and maybe a whole lot of other legislation to control how campaign funds are delivered and what they and the meaning. I mean, we've got a movement called Move to Amend. I'd love to see people pay more attention to what that means, and we need to overturn Citizens United at the Supreme Court level. All sorts of things we need to do in this country to make sure that money is not driving the best decisions from our elected officials.
And Warren Petrick, your thoughts on the $700,000 donation? You know, it's got a lot of people up in arms, but then I've heard arguments that it's free speech. So where do you stand on that?
Well, as you know, pay to play is illegal. And if there were illegal activities going on and illegal contributions, I think the Government Accountability Board would have been on top of that. Every dollar that comes into every campaign must be accounted for, and it's given by individuals. And certainly, even my opponent knows that his individuals that contribute to his campaign or my campaign must be a $500 limit from individuals, not companies. So I do not know anything about this $700,000, and I would hesitate to call it a bribe. I would certainly consider that a campaign contribution and probably many, many different campaign contributions, but I do not know the particulars of his campaign. I just know that anyone can open my books. They're all online. They can see exactly who is contributing and how much. And we do have limits on that, and those will continue to be there. And if it is such a volatile situation, I would not hesitate to ask my opponent why, when he was head of the Elections and Campaign Board, that he did nothing about it. There was no reform that was ever done. Individuals can still give the same amount of money to us, but I believe that now special interest groups can contribute even more as a political action committee. So the courts did decide that that was legal. So much of that is decided by the courts and the Government Accountability Board. So I'm not even going to comment on and give it the credence of a bribe. I would not go there. If it was illegal, it certainly would have been stopped, and it would be in the courts by now.
Oh, and by the way, I held hearings, as every hearing that I could, on bills that were that would have done all the things I just said in my when I was chair of that committee. And that's as much as a chair can do. And you just then push to try to get it on the calendar. And unfortunately, at that time, that didn't happen.
With that, let's take our final break. Time is getting short for our 93rd State Assembly District Candidate Forum here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us by phone, Warren Petrick. He's the Republican incumbent for the 93rd State Assembly District. He's from Pleasant Valley. Democratic challenger Jeff Smith joins us in studio. The number to call in is 800-228-5615, though we are very short on time, so we'll get through as many callers as we can before the top of the hour. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll be back in just a bit. I'm Rich Kramer. Welcome back to the Westside 93rd State Assembly District Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm joined by Republican incumbent Warren Petrick of Pleasant Valley and Democratic challenger Jeff Smith of Brunswick. The number to call in is 800-228-5615. We're loaded up with calls right now, so we go to Eau Claire, and Donna has a question. Go for it, Donna.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a social justice question, and I have a brief introduction and then a two-part question.
Okay. Please be as brief as you can.
I certainly will. Prior to the passage of the federal ID law, Wisconsin's undocumented immigrants could get a driving certificate so they could drive legally and safely in Wisconsin. Now, after the passage of the federal ID law, they cannot. They cannot drive their children to the doctor. They cannot go to work legally or even go to purchase groceries, things that we all should have a right to do. Many states have passed a law providing a driver's certificate for this population. This driver's certificate would include a vision test. It would include driver's training, and it would make the road safer for all of us. Here's the question. If elected, would you support a driver's certificate for undocumented immigrants? And if so, would you be willing to sponsor this legislation?
Excellent question. Thanks so much, Donna. Let's go to Jeff Smith.
Yes, I would. In our 2009 budget, we had quite a battle over that, actually, trying to get that inserted in at the time. We were not successful in doing that. But I've always thought just all the facts you just laid out, Donna, are good reasons why we should do that. It's safer. We make sure that way people are trained who are driving, and they're driving legally. And actually, the farmers are really in favor of that because they really need those employees of theirs, immigrant workers, to be able to come in here and be able to drive their machinery.
All right. And Warren Petrick?
Well, yes, I would have to look at the specific legislation and the wording of anything that comes before me, as I always do. But this has been an issue for some time, and I know the Dairy Business Association has been in favor of looking at this carefully in Wisconsin, and it would help many of our farmers with their labor shortage. And we're facing a labor shortage not only in agriculture but in manufacturing, and so anything we can do to fill that gap would be good. But again, I will have to look at the specific wording of anything. And much of this is a federal issue, so we'll have to work carefully with our colleagues in Washington to make sure that this is a responsible piece of legislation as we go forth. But yes, ma'am, thank you.
All right, and gentlemen, since we're getting close to the top of the hour, I'm going to try to do a rapid-fire type situation with questions here, and we'll also try to take another call. Act 10, the Republicans and promoters of Act 10 say that helped close the $3.6 billion structural deficit. Now, nonpartisan fiscal bureau says there may be a $1.8 billion deficit in the next state budget. Should police and fire personnel be required to make the same sacrifices as other public employees did? And I'll start with you, Warren Petrick.
Was that three questions, Rich?
Well, so basically, should Act 10 be extended to police and fire?
Oh, well, that would have to be a long conversation. At this point, Act 10 has done what it was designed to do, and that was about local control. We've saved about $3 billion so far, and right now I don't see that being amended in any particular way. It's doing the job that it should. My administrators and local governments are well attuned to the changes, and they've been very positive.
All right. Thank you so much. Jeff Smith.
Act 10 was never about balancing the budget. It was about taking away the power of people who work for public sector employees who work for us. And we should not take away that ability from fire and police either. We should actually restore the power of bargaining back to all of our public sector workers so that they are able to help us balance the budget, which, by the way, before Act 10, they had already agreed on contracts that were similar to what the cuts that they did take.
I'd like to follow up on that, though, because the Democrats, you know, in the lame duck session, they tried to push through some contracts with the public employee unions, and in fact they, you know, got one of their members, one of the Democrats, out of jail to do it, but they were unsuccessful. Is that a sign of employees that were willing to make those sacrifices?
It was. Those contracts actually were taking those cuts. And by the way, that wasn't a Democrat, that was an independent.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Warren Petrick, would you like to respond?
Well, that was an interesting political ploy there, and it was done in the last moments of an administration that was totally lame duck. And thank goodness one of the Democrat senators said that it should be handed on to the next administration, and we should deal with it in a responsible fashion, which we did. So that was rather interesting twist on that.
All right, and with Warren Petrick, I'll start with you. School choice, some people call it school choice, some call it vouchers. A lot of political connotations to both terms there. But long story short, is Wisconsin's school choice voucher program benefiting lower-income families in Milwaukee or even in our district here?
In our district, we have fabulous schools. No one is in the voucher program here. But the Wisconsin Parental Choice Program, as it's called, has been a success in giving children an opportunity to be leave a failing school, which we don't have in the 93rd District. We have wonderful schools there. However, when there are schools that are not a good fit for the parents and the child, I think they should have multiple learning options. We should look at a compendium of options. Public, private, charter, virtual, open enrollment, homeschooling are also all good. And my only question as we go forward is, will it help the children succeed? How will it impact existing schools? And how will it impact children not participating in the program? My central concern with any option is how it helps the children grow and learn and be prepared in a very competitive, highly technical world.
Thanks for that. If I could follow up real quick, there was a report that came out showing that nearly 80% of the students that this year that used the program were already enrolled in private schools. Does that cause you concern, Warren?
It did cause me concern, and those rules were written by the Department of Public Instruction after we passed the legislation. And so we will look at that carefully going forward, and I think that was an oversight by the department itself. And we need to work very carefully with them, making sure that it – and right now the qualifications are very high, and you must fit in those federal income brackets that qualify for the voucher. So we need to give people a hand up, and that is exactly what the voucher system does. But I don't see it expanding, and I certainly won't support it unless I see more money for my K-12 schools throughout the state.
All right, thanks for that.
First of all, Warren mentioned that we had none of that in our district, no vouchers in our district, but that's not necessarily true because Eau Claire Regis is accepting vouchers, and I'm sure some of those students live in our district. But let's go. This is such a bad idea. There are a lot of choices out there for parents. Always has been. Nobody has stopped anyone from homeschooling. Nobody stops a student from switching to a charter school or to a private school in any way they want. There's all sorts of choices. The choices have not gone away, and nothing changes. But the taxpayers shouldn't be left on the hook to pay for those choices. The taxpayers are there to support public education to be sure that everybody has the opportunity diversity at a good education in public schools. You know, I have to mention this too. One of the most overlooked broken promises of this legislature and this governor, it was the fact going into this last 2 years was, oh, we promise we're going to make them accountable. We promise we're going to pass legislation to make them equally accountable as the public schools, and they didn't even come close. They didn't even consider a bill to do that, and they broke that promise.
All right, Brian in Fall Creek, I've got you on the air right now. I need you to be very brief, no opening statements. What's your question?
Mr. Smith, you claim that you're a fan of redistricting reform, but when you were an assemblyman, I believe you were the chair of the Elections and Campaign Reform Committee, and at the time, your party held all three branches, I mean, the House, or Assembly, Senate, and the governor's office, and you did nothing about redistricting reform. I mean, if it was so important to you, why didn't you and your party do something about it when you were the head of the committee?
All right. Madison. Thanks so much, Brian. Jeff Smith.
Thanks, Brian. Like I said earlier, we did have a hearing on that bill. I was on that bill. And beyond that, again, we had leadership at that time that I would agree made the wrong choices and we should have passed that bill that I was in favor of. And I'm still in favor of it.
Of nonpartisan.
It should be nonpartisan.
Okay. And Warren Petrick, should redistricting be nonpartisan or not?
The Constitution has stood for over 200 years in this state. It is provided for the majority party to draw the maps. And so as long as that's working, and actually those that have gone to an independent study have had more problems with the districts not being of the makeup that is cohesive. And right now I believe that that's exactly what we did. We looked at the constitutional requirements, and they were all met. And so I don't think that this is, I think it's a political red herring. I really don't believe that is a high priority, and it wasn't in the previous administration either.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen, so much. That's our time. I'd like to thank the candidates for their discussion today. Warren Petrick is the 93rd State Assembly District Republican incumbent, and Jeff Smith is the Democratic challenger. Thank you both very much. Good discussion, gentlemen. Thanks also to Team Westside, including Mort Cypress, Henry Lippold, Lauren Segrin, Dean Collenbeck, and Debbie Brown. Tune in next week for a post-election wrap-up with UW-Eau Claire Professor Emeritus Mort Cypress. Until then, have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.